Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Willow Center podcast. It is the month of April 2024. I am Chase Cotton, the community director here at the Willow Center, one of your hosts, along with...
I'm Mason. I'm the operations director here at the Willow Center.
Thanks so much for tuning in again, whether you are listening on your favorite podcast streaming app or you're watching us here on YouTube. So this month, in the month of April, we've been talking about the topic of honesty in all of our public communication channels, as well as internally. We've been talking a lot about it. Mm-hmm. And there was this quote from the American painter and author Walter Inglis Anderson that I feel really summarizes feelings about honesty. He says, "Our lives improve only when we take chances, and the first and most difficult risk we can take is to be honest with ourselves."
I think
that's powerful. Honesty with ourselves, I think, is maybe what we spent more time and attention on this month than maybe any other aspect of honesty, because it takes so much honesty with yourself to reach out and ask for help when you need it, mm-hmm. right? Like, asking for help when you need mental health counseling or when you need substance use treatment is a tough thing to do. But that honesty is so key, and it's a difficult but important risk to take. Would you agree?
Oh, I would completely agree. And I really think that a lot of times we don't even know we're being dishonest with ourselves. We think that everything is going fine and great, just because sometimes we don't even have the tools to look under the hood.
Yeah, really good point. So hopefully we can give you some of those tools today. So without further ado, let's dive in. All right,
we're gonna
dive straight into inner child work. So if you've been to therapy, you know what that's about. Mason, can you tell me a story from your childhood about a time that helped solidify honesty as a core value for you?
So I was, I want to say, 10 years old. We were in a... we were at a place where we were renting it, and my sister had illegally downloaded a movie.
Oh, snap.
Online. Illegally
movie pirate.
I know. She, arg. And we were on the coast, too.
Did she know that piracy is not a victimless crime?
It is. What a throwback. And so she downloads this movie, and lies and lies and lies. Oh, I didn't do it. I didn't do it. I didn't do it. But what my parents had in their back pocket was that there was a letter that the owner of the place had gotten from the FBI about pirating a movie.
Oh, my word.
Yes. So, you know, like, in her punishment, she got, like, her everything grounded for, like, 6 months. And I, like, full, like, it went through. It was a really, you know.
That's serious.
It was bad. It was bad. But, like, I just, like, I think that what solidified it for me was just the, like, you could see, like, okay, eventually they're going to have to believe this. And you saw it and saw it and saw it. And it was just like, oh, man, you know, like, there was, like, you could see the damage done just to yourself in that. At least, like, that's what I saw.
Yeah.
And then the actual damage of being grounded for 6 months.
Yeah. That's rough, man.
How about you, Chase?
Yeah, so the story that comes to mind for me was from my Little League baseball days. So I played Little League baseball all throughout elementary and most of middle school. And right around the sixth grade or so, myself and a couple of my teammates had stayed after one of our practices watching the other team, the rival team from the same town that we lived in, set up and start their practice and running their drills.
Yeah.
And instead of just, like, hanging out and seeing our, you know, mostly buddies that played on that team do their thing, or be encouraging, and of course we started heckling.
Of course.
Heckling just violently. We were saying things that little sixth grade boys should not be saying, and laughing at them when they dropped the ball, and you know, it got bad enough and loud enough and raucous enough, and our parents weren't there to pick us up yet from practice that the opposing team's coach came over and was like, "What are you guys doing? Just, like, seriously, like, what are you doing? Like, get out of here. You have to stop." And so that was enough to spook me. Like, I was like, okay, I'm going to, you know, I'll walk home if I need to. Right. But the other two kept going, and the coach ended up calling the cops. And so I think maybe, you know, he was trying to just teach us a lesson, because obviously we weren't doing anything illegal, but, call the cops. And so I hightailed it out of there. I ran home. Of course, the police followed up at each of our addresses to make sure that they talked to each of our parents after that. So it must have been a boring night in Rossville, Indiana during that year. But yeah, so my dad answers the door, and there's a police officer there saying, like, "Hey, did you know that your son was heckling the other team and causing trouble and just being, you know, in general, a stupid little kid, you know?" And that got me grounded for a while. But, you know, I wasn't planning on telling my mom and dad about that.
Right.
I was going to lie about it. I was like, oh, I wasn't there. You know, I had a plan. But when the cop showed up the front doorstep, all that faded away very quickly.
Yeah.
And so to really kind of drive the lesson home, my dad and my mom made me go get honest with the other team and the coach. They said, like, you know, you're getting cut off from all everything until you go to the next practice. You're going to stand out there in front of their dugout and apologize to the whole team in person.
Wow.
So that was my moment of honesty. And ever since then, I have definitely understood in the guts of my little kid guilt that being honest is just better, you know, and honestly being kind is better. So that's what came to mind for me.
I like how both of our examples involved law enforcement.
For some reason, it's hard to lie when you got somebody with a badge and a gun standing at your door. But yeah.
Let's
make this a little more specific to the context of the Willow Center and of any clients or potential clients or fellow providers that might be listening. What role in your experience do you see that honesty plays in one's mental health journey?
I think that as people start their mental health journey, you start off with an honesty, with a certain level of honesty. I want to say, like, you have maybe all right honesty with yourself. And here's why I say that. Because sometimes we lie to ourselves and we say, oh, I'm better than I am. But sometimes we lie to ourselves and then we say, oh, I'm much worse, or I am not
worthy.
Could go
either way on that spectrum.
Yeah. And so as we start this mental health journey, I think everyone starts with a piece of dishonesty. And what mental health really is about for a lot of people is getting an honest picture of yourself.
Right.
And yeah, I don't know. Do you feel like that has been your experience, or how has this played in for you?
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think you hit the nail on the head on describing two ends of a spectrum there, right? Because, like, you have those who might struggle with suicidality and self-worth issues that believe that, you know, there's no version of their life that is worth living. Mm-hmm. And that is a dishonest look at life.
Right.
You know, due to the diseased brain and the symptoms thereof, right? And then on the other end, you have those that might be, like, just really terribly anxious, but they think they're, like, high-functioning achievers.
Yeah.
Right? Where it's, like, they desperately need help to, like, manage this anxiety before it gives them a heart attack.
Right.
But they think they're just go-getters, and they're in that hustle culture. You know, it's like two ends of the same coin.
Well, or I even think of the person who is incredibly rude, and then they're like, oh, yeah, I'm just confident. And it's like, no, you're actually real. That's why it's hard for you to connect with people, because you're actually being, you know, you're not just being sandpaper. You're maybe being, you're sandpaper, but you're on one of the sandpaper machines.
You're really grinding people's gears.
Yeah.
So how about the same question, but let's talk about the recovery journey, since they kind of go hand in hand for mental health. What role does honesty play in long-term recovery?
So honesty is a core value in recovery. I mean, with the first place being, you have to be honest that you have, you know, a problem with addiction.
Yeah.
Until you can meet that honesty, then it's really difficult. But then I think the next step in honesty is, if you have a relapse, a slip, a craving, a trigger, anything like that, in those happen for everyone across the board, right?
Right.
I have people who I work with who are 3 or 4 years into sobriety and recovery, still battling with triggers and cravings.
Right.
And I think especially in early sobriety and recovery, it can be really difficult, because it's like, oh, I'm broken. Oh, I'm messed up because I still want this thing. And it's like, no, this has been your thing for so long, and you're learning a new way, and you're getting a new way. And honestly, it's hard to do that.
Right.
But being honest throughout that process is really difficult as well.
Yeah, being honest about the support you need. Something else that comes to mind for me in regards to long-term recovery and honesty is like the fun, the social aspect.
Because
I think there are a lot of adults and young people, but mostly adults, that have fully bought into the lie that you cannot have fun sober. You cannot have fun hanging out with people if there's not beer present or weed. Right? Like, this is just a pervasive lie in American culture. And I think it's important to get honest with yourself that you could have fun just playing a board game.
Right.
You know? And maybe there's like some little kiddishness or almost a feeling of vulnerability that comes with admitting that you can have fun and not be using something to do so, right? Because of the sort of adultness and sort of false maturity attributed to substance use. But getting honest with what you enjoy doing and the people you enjoy hanging out with and the fact that it doesn't require using, I think is a huge progressive step in your long-term recovery.
And I think that that's so true, especially for those, you know, just like house activities. Because I think a lot of people think, when they think healthy habits or healthy things, they think of exercising. And, you know, many people don't do that under the influence.
Right.
But that's not the only healthy habit, you know. Just sitting down and taking some time to spend time with people and talk over, you know, a cup of coffee. You know, that is a step towards sobriety and recovery for a lot of people.
Yeah.
There's nothing there. It's just you enjoying your time together.
And there might be other aspects of your life that are attributing to the stress you're experiencing or maybe related to trauma you've experienced that require an honest look. Right. Like you might need to honestly look at the fact that you can't keep a budget to save your life, let alone a penny. You know, you might need to get honest about the fact that the last time you kept a schedule was in grade school.
Yeah.
Right. Like there are some of these like basic like everyday life things where it's like you may honestly need some support from a professional just to like reestablish, you know, a good, solid, mature baseline in order to build a foundation of you know, good mental wellness and recovery upon. Even though they may not immediately feel associated with a disease and the symptoms you're experiencing.
No, I completely agree with that. And I think that that is, I mean, if you got into, for a lot of people, you get into active, you know, maybe not active addiction, but you get into substance use at like 8 to 13 years old, imagine telling a 13-year-old, hey, do you have a budget? Of course they don't, right?
Right.
And it's like, if you've been taking substances since then, it's like, well, there's a good chance that's just something you haven't thought of.
Yeah, haven't had the opportunity to learn.
And so, you know, we've talked a lot about honesty so far, Chase, but let's flip the coin a little bit.
Okay.
Is being dishonest ever justified? Just in your opinion.
We're both married, aren't we?
We are.
And I feel like the example that comes to mind here is sort of the classic, if not a little bit comedic, do I look fat in this dress?
Oh.
This is what I don't know why my brain always goes to this. Or like, you know, how do I look in these pants, you know? And I, there have been times I've been not 100% honest, you know, out of risk of not wanting to hurt someone's feelings or not wanting to like do damage where damage doesn't need to be done.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, what am I preserving here? Am I preserving saving face, or am I preserving, you know, the actual truth and quality and foundation of mutual respect here in my relationship?
Yeah.
And so I go back and forth when it's like kind of interpersonal examples like that on like whether or not dishonesty is ever justified, because you can also be honest and be a total dick. You know, like you can be honest and like just be cruel to people.
For sure.
And I don't think that's justified behavior.
No.
But is there a way to be honest and kind? Is there a way to be honest and respectful? Is there a way to be, you know, to avoid dishonesty and still save face? I think there has to be.
Oh, yeah.
I don't always 100% meet that expectation of myself, but it's definitely a goal that I have in all the relationships I'm a part of. Like I want to be both kind-hearted and genuine and sweet, but honest.
Yeah, and I completely agree with that. And I think that what I really wrestle with, and the concept I really continue to wrestle with, is within honesty, you want to be, you know, you want to be forthcoming. You want them to know what the information they need, right?
Right.
But what they actually need to know, I think that's really where and now some people might call that dishonesty. Oh, you're not being fully transparent with the truth.
Right.
But I think it depends on like, if I think what you're doing is incredibly dumb, right? Like, I think like this is a really poor decision.
Yeah.
But I cannot say that in a way that shows like grace and love and truth, because maybe I don't have that relationship with you, or maybe it's just not my time to say it, right?
Yeah.
I think that that can be okay, but some could categorize that.
So what you're getting at is the withholding of truthful information.
Yes.
You're not talking about lying here. You're just talking about not saying things.
Right.
Boy, that's a that alone could require an entire other podcast episode.
Yeah.
Oh, well, because tough.
We categorized it earlier in the episode with you know, long-term recovery.
Right.
We said that if somebody withholds telling you about triggers or cravings or needing help, you know, that is akin to dishonesty a little bit.
They're definitely holding hands.
Yeah. You know.
That's tough.
It's a hard one.
I don't know if I have a good like response to that. I think that's just tough, and we just sit in the toughness, and we got to figure that out with our hearts and intuition.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that is really where it comes into play. And that's the beauty of mental health work, going to counseling, all this stuff, is we continue to unlock our heart. And as our heart comes back online for some people, or maybe getting your heart back in check, whatever that looks like,
right?
You can actually listen to it, and then they'll say like, oh, I was a little out of line. You gotta step that back, or man, that really wasn't fully truthful for you, was it? You know, like, right. You really should have been more yourself in that moment. You should have been more forthcoming.
For sure. I'm a firm believer that most human beings are born with some sort of like native instinctual moral compass. I firmly believe that.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a person of faith, some would call that like being made in God's image.
Right.
And God being a moral being. Like, I think you're born with some sort of ticker that's like, nope, don't do that. Mm-hmm. Mm-mm, yes, that's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And I think when you add mental illness and you add substance use struggles, you learn to ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
You learn, or almost you unlearn the sound of its voice in your head.
Yeah.
Right? Because the sound of the ugly voices and the angry voices and the addicted voices and the self-hating voices get louder and louder and louder through that struggle. So I think it's, yeah, I think the way you worded it was so poignant. So, right, let's land the plane then. Yeah. So what practices would you recommend in order to become more honest with yourself and those around you?
All right. So I'm gonna let y'all in a little bit.
Okay.
So I love to, whenever I am like meditating or getting into a place where I'm trying to be a little bit more spiritual, I always love this idea of just like, okay, when I'm prepping to get in that moment, I say, like, I'm going to open my heart in this moment.
Mm.
And now it feels cheesy and corny, and I maybe I could be a guru, but but genuinely for me, it puts me in a place where I'm like, okay, I'm actually going to listen to what I think is right and what's wrong. Not just what my brain is saying, not like just logically what I think.
Yeah.
Because I can logic out why I should play, you know, this game I enjoy for 12 hours. I can logically find a good reason to do that, right?
It's self-care, wink.
Right, but I know right as I turn off my phone screen, turn off my computer or whatever, and that black screen faces me back, I feel like, man, that was a bad, you know, like I did not use my time well, right?
Right.
And so like when I get in touch with my heart, that allows me to be honest with myself and just say, hey, these are, and it allows my heart a time to speak to me and say, well, hey, good job here, but also, man, you got some stuff to button up over here. And so it's never fun. I don't like doing it, but it does help me maintain a little honesty. How about you, Chase?
Yeah, I appreciate that self-reflection recommendation. For me, I think one of the main things in my life that helps me cultivate honesty is asking for feedback from people I trust, which is rarely comfortable.
Yeah.
But in particular, if there's been a scenario or I've offended someone or stepped on someone's toes or maybe something at work happened that didn't go the way I hoped it would go, and I invite whether it's my wife in or you in or another, you know, like one of my supervisors in, like, just say, what do you think about this? Did I handle myself right?
Mm.
You know, like one thing comes to mind as an example where it's like, I had a pretty heated text exchange with someone, and although I felt righteously angry about how this person offended me, my response was not tactful in the slightest. Certainly wasn't professional,
but it was honest.
It was honest. Touche. But the moment I asked my wife to look at that and just read through it and be like, "Did I handle myself all right?" It was like immediately no. She's like, no, you got to apologize for this one. And I needed that honest feedback. And that helped me stay true to my core values and swallow my pride and go back the next day and apologize to that person.
Right.
Which, you know, was difficult. But had I not asked for that feedback, I would have just let that fester, and that could have blown up into something way worse than it ever was in the first place.
Yeah. And so I think we've gotten to this beautiful point where, you know, there is a nuance with honesty.
Uh-huh.
But at the end of the day, I think that it is the best policy. Not to be cheesy, not to be corny, but if you're in any situation where you are unsure and you have the opportunity to be honest, the likelihood that that's going to help you more than dishonesty, and the likelihood that you're going to think about it less, the likelihood you're going to fear any repercussion, you know, like, the beauty is, when you're honest, everything is out in the open, and you get to deal with that right there. You don't have to worry or scheme or plot or nothing. It's all there, right?
Yeah.
And it's more to deal with in the moment, but there's nothing else there, which is always, you know, I think there's a beauty to it.
It's an easier way to live your life.
It is. But
yeah, I think that about wraps it up.
That's all I got.
I think you just put that in the oven. We'll just let that bake now.
Yeah, 450, 50 minutes. See you guys next month.
Thank you all for tuning in. We really appreciate your willingness to give us some of your time and your attention to talk about these important topics. We'd love to know maybe some stories from your childhood or stories from your more recent adulthood that helped cultivate honesty as a value for you, right? Send us an email or leave a comment on the YouTube video. We'd love to know your story, and we'd love to be able to encourage you if you are needing help reaching that point of honesty, or maybe you just had a moment of honesty and you're like, you know what, I think I need some professional help and a professional supporter in my life, like a counselor or a peer coach or a therapist. Please know the Willow Center is here for you. In that context, next month is the month of May, and we're going to be talking about mental health awareness, celebrating National Mental Health Awareness Month throughout the United States. So we'll be sharing some stories in regards to mental health, sharing some positive mental health tools for how you can support your own wellness and support wellness of those in your life. And I think it's gonna be a great conversation. So please tune in then. Again, I've been one of your hosts, Chase.
And I'm Mason.
And we'll catch you next month. Until then, take care of yourselves.